No one needs another true crime podcast in their life, but we know you want one. Melissa and I are best friends, and we wanted more too.
When Whitney and I couldn't find exactly what we wanted, we created our own. Cults, Crimes, and Cabernet embraces the grim realities of the world with a side of wine. Don't drink wine? That's okay too.
Over the last three seasons, our true crime journey has evolved from being a listener like you to becoming advocates. Each week, we cover an unsolved case in a different state in an effort to create new leads to help advance the case.
To take advocacy one step further, we also travel to locations to help families of those who have gone missing or have been murdered.
Whether it's a foot search or passing out flyers, we will be there, no matter where.
No matter who.
We invite you to join us, so pop a cork and grab a glass, because we have work to do.
Cults, Crimes, and Cabernet is available wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Missing Persons, brought to you by Abject Entertainment. Be sure to check out some of the other great true crime podcasts from this network, including The Murder in My Family,
DNA ID, Zodiac Speaking,
Scene of the Crime,
Beyond Bizarre True Crime,
Citizen Detective,
and
Campus Killings.
All of these podcasts are available for you to binge on right now, wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe where you're listening to this podcast so you don't miss an episode.
The views and opinions expressed by guests on this podcast do not necessarily represent those of the podcast, its creators, or sponsors. If you would like to discuss a missing persons case on this podcast, please be sure to visit missingpersonspodcast.net. This episode may contain unsettling or disturbing subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Missing Persons, a podcast dedicated to spreading the word about people who have vanished under mysterious or unexplained circumstances and the family members who are looking for answers. I'm Jess Betancourt.
And I'm Mike Morford. Together, we created this podcast to help give a voice to people who continue to search for their missing loved ones, in some cases, even after decades have gone by. In each episode, you'll hear from Jess giving listeners the backstory and the basic facts of the disappearance.
Then Mike will speak with someone who's intimately connected to the missing person, and his guest will share their story with us.
Please stay tuned at the conclusion of this episode to hear about our Patreon program and our commitment to help find people who have gone missing. We'll also share with you where you can find more information and how you can join our team and help our efforts. You'll get recommendations for other podcasts we think you'll enjoy and more.
So sit back and enjoy this episode, and who knows, maybe you can help us find someone who's missing. In this episode of Missing Persons, we're departing from our usual formula of detailing the case of a person who's gone missing and speaking with their loved one about the case. This time, we're discussing the growing problem of human sex trafficking, told through the stories of two moms whose daughters were both trafficked. Ashley Tiffany was recently rescued from a human traffic situation by her mother, Lynette, and Kristen Galvin remains missing, and her mother, Robin, has evidence that her daughter has been trafficked. According to the U.S. Department of Justice, human trafficking is a crime that involves the exploitation of a person for the purpose of compelled labor or a commercial sex act. The Federal Trafficking Victims Protection Act of 2000 and its subsequent reauthorizations define human trafficking as follows. A. Sex trafficking in which a commercial sex act is induced by force, fraud, or coercion, or in which the person induced to perform such act has not attained 18 years of age, or B, the recruitment, harboring, transportation, provision, or obtaining of a person for labor or services through the use of force, fraud, or coercion, for the purpose of subjection to involuntary servitude, peonage, debt bondage, or slavery. Note that under this federal act, any person under the age of 18 who is induced into performing a commercial sex act is considered a victim of human trafficking. As you can hear from the language set forth in the statute, there are two components of forced labor that qualify as human trafficking under federal law. One is essentially forced servitude or enslavement, in which victims are coerced into performing labor for the benefit of others. An example would be a case in which a young woman is forced, whether through coercion, threats, blackmail, or any other means, to work as a hotel maid or a field hand, and her labor profits others rather than herself. But that's not what happened to Ashley Tiffany or Kristen Galvin. Ashley and Kristen, like thousands of other young women in the U.S., were sex trafficked. And what happened to these two victims is happening all around the country. The most common victim of this type of crime in the U.S. is a vulnerable individual, someone who has few ties to the community she's in, someone without a network of supportive family or friends, someone drug addicted, someone homeless or living on the fringes of society, and so on. These women are preyed upon because their abduction or enticement into sexual slavery often fails to raise alarms. Their disappearances garner almost no notice. These are not incidents such as the abduction of Eliza Fletcher, Gabby Petito, or Molly Tibbetts, which received immediate and overwhelming national attention. Instead, they're women whose vanishings remain largely under the radar, of little notice or concern to any but their immediate families. Part of the problem with understanding the issue of human sex trafficking is the difficulty in obtaining reliable statistics. Many people fail to report trafficking for fear of reprisal, humiliation, victim blaming, and so on. The actual numbers of human trafficking incidents is largely considered unquantifiable. To help get a handle on this problem, the Trafficking Victims Protection Act of 2000 that I mentioned earlier was reauthorized in 2008 as the William Wilberforce Trafficking Victims Protection Reauthorization Act. This reauthorized statute requires the FBI to collect human trafficking offense data. As a result, in 2013, the FBI established the Human Trafficking Data Collection as part of its Uniform Crime Reporting Program. A 2019 report from this program reflected the following data from 48 reporting states and the U.S. territory of Puerto Rico. A total of 1,883 incidents of human trafficking were reported. 1,607 were in the category of commercial sex acts, and 274 were instances of involuntary servitude. Law enforcement agencies arrested 708 offenders in correlation with these incidents. These numbers will give listeners an idea of the number of human trafficking cases that were actually documented, verified, and reported by agencies providing the information to the FBI's reporting program. But as we've heard, many cases are not reported. A website called DeliverFund estimates that the actual numbers are much, much higher. DeliverFund is a nonprofit organization founded to combat human trafficking in the U.S. Its mission statement is, quote, DeliverFund disrupts global human trafficking markets by combining uniquely qualified personnel with the best technologies and then leveraging them in new ways to reach and rescue victims of human trafficking, end quote. This directly from their website. It is estimated that between 15,000 to 50,000 women and children are forced into sexual slavery in the United States every year. The total number varies wildly as it is very difficult to research. According to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, the average age of a child sex trafficking victim in the United States is 15. Victims are either used for pornographic pictures or videos, or they are prostituted out through online platforms such as Craigslist, Facebook, and MocoSpace. The incidents can occur at hotels, motels, massage parlors, truck stops, and so on. The Human Trafficking Institute studies data to issue annual reports on human trafficking prosecutions in the U.S. These are cases that are actually filed in federal court. The Institute's team of attorneys and law school students review every human trafficking case in the federal court system each year to publish a comprehensive data set that includes the type of trafficking case, a profile of the trafficker, details about the trafficking scheme, age and gender of the victims, and the district where the case took place. Its report for 2021 found there were 140 criminal human trafficking cases filed in federal courts that year against a total of 260 defendants. 8% of these cases dealt with forced labor, and the other 92% related to sex trafficking. Over half of the total 449 victims were minors. Over 95% of the victims were female. 96% of the defendants were convicted. So, as listeners can hear, while federal prosecutors are securing convictions in the overwhelming majority of the sex trafficking cases they bring to court, the number of cases that actually get to that point is very small. In order to better combat human trafficking, local and regional law enforcement agencies need to take the problem seriously and pursue, apprehend, and arrest suspected traffickers. And citizens need to more diligently report such crimes. And that means they need to know what to look out for. Here are some common myths about human trafficking as set forth on the humantrafficking.org website. Myth: it's always or usually a violent crime. Reality: by far the most pervasive myth about human trafficking is that it is always or often involving kidnapping or otherwise physically forcing someone into a situation. In reality, most human traffickers use psychological means such as tricking, defrauding, manipulating, or threatening victims into providing commercial sex or exploitative labor. The Deliver Fund backs this up. It says, another common misconception is that human traffickers are kidnappers who drive around in vans and grab unaware victims from back alleys. Actually, human traffickers operate in plain sight and will use all sorts of tools and tactics at their disposal to get what they want. These efforts often come in the form of psychological manipulation, threats, and intimidation. Myth: people being trafficked are physically unable to leave their situations, are locked in, or held against their will. Reality: that is sometimes the case. More often, however, people in trafficking situations stay for reasons that are much more complicated. Some lack the basic necessities to physically get out, such as transportation or a safe place to live, and develop dependencies on their traffickers. Some are afraid for their safety or the safety of their loved ones. Some have been so effectively manipulated that they do not identify at that point as being under the control of another person. Myth: human trafficking only happens in illegal or underground industries. Reality: human trafficking cases have been reported and prosecuted in industries including restaurants, cleaning services, construction, factories, farming, and more. Myth: only women and girls can be victims and survivors of sex trafficking. Reality: many sex trafficking victims and survivors are male. Myth: human trafficking involves moving, traveling, or transporting a person across state or national borders. Reality: human trafficking is often confused with human smuggling, which involves illegal border crossings. In fact, the crime of human trafficking does not require any movement whatsoever. Survivors can be recruited and trafficked in their own hometowns and even in their own homes. Myth: all commercial sex is human trafficking. Reality: all commercial sex involving a minor is legally considered human trafficking. Commercial sex involving an adult is human trafficking if the person providing the commercial sex is doing so against his or her will as a result of force, fraud, or coercion. Myth: traffickers target victims they don't know. Reality: many survivors have been trafficked by romantic partners, including spouses, and by family members. Also, many traffickers work their way into the trust of their intended victims by helping them financially, providing food, drugs, or other commodities, and seeming to be on their side. Now, a little information on the two cases we are focusing on today. In the early summer of 2022, 28-year-old Ashley Tiffany was living in her home state of Idaho. Unbeknownst to her family, in July, Ashley traveled to Salt Lake City, Utah. She didn't know anyone in Utah, and it's not clear why she decided to go to Salt Lake City. The Salvation Army had helped her purchase a bus ticket. Ashley's mother, Lynette, who is our guest today, told us that the family spoke with Ashley from Salt Lake on July 22nd, so they knew that she had made it there. But after a little while, Ashley went out of contact with her family. They grew increasingly concerned about her, especially because she is an epileptic who requires prescription medication to help control her condition. And Her family is candid about the fact that Ashley was using illicit drugs and was an addict. Nonetheless, it was not the norm for Ashley to remain out of contact. Notwithstanding her addiction, she would always check back in with her family. So when she uncharacteristically went completely silent, her mother went on a mission to find her daughter. This proved difficult as Ashley was transient and was in an unfamiliar state. Lynette reached out to us at Missing Persons to help shed some light on her daughter's missing persons case. Of course, we agreed. In the meantime, Lynette traveled to Salt Lake City and started handing out flyers about Ashley. And miraculously, one of those flyers paid off, and Lynette received a tip about where Ashley was. Lynette's fears came true when she discovered that her daughter was the victim of human sex trafficking. But Ashley was alive, and despite her harrowing and traumatic ordeal, was able to be rescued by her family and returned home. You will hear Lynette tell the story of how, as we've seen too often, the police downplayed her concerns, and she personally had to take steps to remove her daughter before her captors shipped her to another state where she may never have been found. Kristen Galvin's case bears some similarities to Ashley's, but her mom is still awaiting resolution. The main difference in the two cases is that, unlike in Ashley's case, Kristen is a child who was groomed and lured into a situation where she was trafficked. Kristen was living with her grandparents in Spring, Texas, in January of 2020 when she disappeared. On the night of January 2nd, the family left the home for an outing, and Kristen opted to stay home. At some point, she left the house, and she's never been seen again. In looking at Kristen's cell records, the family learned that she was texting with dangerous people the family didn't know, and they believe she was lured away. Her mom, Robin, reported her daughter missing to the authorities the next day. A Montgomery County Sheriff's Office media release dated March 25, 2020 read, "Media release, missing person, Kristen Galvin. Kristen was last seen leaving her residence in the Spring, Texas area on January 2, 2020. She has been seen in the Bissonnette area of Houston and is believed to frequent the area." Robin has reason to believe that Kristen was sex trafficked, forced into sex work or sexual servitude against her will. Kristen had run away before and was found on Bissonnette Street in Houston in the company of men who were known for sex trafficking. Robin brought her home when she was recovered by the police and sent her to Spring to stay with her mom. Within a day, her daughter was gone and she remains missing. The FBI believes Kristen has indeed been trafficked. FBI Special Agent Bethany Morris told CBS Austin, quote, "Because Kristen is a possible victim of human trafficking, this means her life could be in danger," end quote. The FBI learned that witnesses reported seeing a photo of Kristen on websites known for advertising prostitution. The district attorney showed Robin a photo of a girl that had been found online in the Atlanta area in an ad for the escort services of two girls. Robin identified the girl in the photo as almost certainly Kristen. She flew up to Atlanta to try to find her herself, but she was unable to, although she did speak to some other girls who were featured in the same ad as Kristen. Robin hired a PI, established a billboard alerting the public to Kristen's case, has been in constant contact with authorities and the media, and has personally searched for her daughter. Men who she believes were involved in her daughter's case have been arrested on sex trafficking charges for the victimization of other women, and one has recently been convicted for a 2019 case of sex trafficking. He is serving a 15-year sentence. Kristen remains missing. When she disappeared, Kristen Galvin was 15 years old, 5'6" tall, and 135 pounds. She is described as a Hispanic female with blonde hair and hazel eyes. Kristen has a small tattoo of a heart on her ankle. The Montgomery County Sheriff's Office asks if anyone has any information on Kristen's whereabouts, please contact them at 936-760-5800 or contact the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children at 1-800-THE-LOST. That's 1-800-843-5678. For sex trafficking victims and their families, the National Human Trafficking Resource Center hotline at 1-888-373-7888 answers questions and responds to crises in 170 different languages. Mike Morford sat down with Ashley and Kristen's moms to talk about their daughters' cases. That conversation is coming up after a word from our sponsors.
Hi, Lynette, and thank you for coming on Missing Persons to discuss your family's experience with human trafficking.
Hi, how are you?
Good. I'm happy to have you here, and this is a very important episode for us to talk about the dangers of human trafficking and what, if anything, can be done to, you know, learn from people like yourself that have gone through this. You know, we're talking with another mom, Robin, who's desperate to find her own daughter, Kristen, who's been trafficked. She's still looking, but you were in her shoes over the summer. But fortunately, your daughter, Ashley, was recovered. So you're proof that sometimes these cases can result in a trafficked loved one being found. I want to go back to how things unfolded for you in your case and how Ashley went missing. Can you share a little bit about that and how you discovered that she wasn't just a missing person, but that she had also been trafficked?
Definitely. So, you know, it went back, you know, we're not perfect. Nobody's perfect in this world, right? My daughter is, she's an addict. And I, even in her worst day, you know, she would either call, text, you know, video us. And I was like, after three days, I'm like, something's going on. But then it's like, you know, I went back and forth and I contemplated, maybe she just doesn't have a phone again or whatever happened to her phone. But even in that time, I'm like, every time she never had a phone before, like whether she lost it, sold it, whatever, broke, she would always find a way to borrow some useful. After a week went on, I'm like, okay, it's time to start calling hospitals. And started calling every hospital, like in Idaho and in Utah, like every single one. And the worst part was calling like the mortuary, and I didn't want to do it, but I had to, as a mom, I had to do it. You know, that's where I drew the line, you know. At that point, I'm like, okay, now something's really going on, you know, because nowhere to be found. I Googled her name. I just did everything I could, you know. I then called, you know, I did get word that she went from Idaho to Salt Lake. And how I got word on that was the town in Idaho. The police officer was very nice. I talked to him. He called me the next day. So the Salvation Army gave her a bus ticket to go out to Utah, to Salt Lake. So that's when I contacted Salt Lake. And honestly, it's like they didn't take us here. You know, they're asking all these questions. And all the detective kept saying is, well, she's just, you know, probably just out there in her addiction. And she doesn't want to be found. And I kept telling them, no, you don't know my daughter. This is, even in her addiction, her worst time, she would never do this. And I know that for a fact, especially my mom, you know, with my mom. You know, my dad passed away 3 years ago. You know, she would never do that. And it's just like, it was like pulling teeth, you know? So then I had to do what I had to do. And, you know, me and a whole bunch of friends came together, made flyers. I posted all over the media. I mean, it was everywhere. TikTok, I mean, just everywhere. Like, even people I didn't know was sharing things, you know? After a month, you know, I decided, you know what, maybe I should go out to Salt Lake. And a couple of my friends came together and we went to Salt Lake because I wasn't getting everywhere, even with, you know, the detective. So, you know, we go to Salt Lake and we actually have a friend that lives there. We stay the night. I wanted to go out that night searching for her, putting up the flyers. And I was told by him, not a good time to do it. You don't want to be around there at night. So we woke up super early the next morning and printed out a whole bunch of flyers again, started passing them out with the homeless. You know, yes, I could have been putting myself in harm's way, but for your children, you'll go to any length, you know, to save your kids. That's when all day long. You know, it was just back and forth. Hey, have you seen her? You know, some people said they did. And one person at one point said, on a bicycle, said, yes, I know her, but I can't tell you where she's at because it could be a danger. I'm like, well, I'm her mom. You need to tell me. But at the same point, like within a few hours, police officers are out on the street. So I'm like, hey, I got word this is where my daughter's at. And I knew for a fact she was being trafficked. They're like, well, how do you know? I'm like, because I know. You know, I'm like, I just know. And this information that's given to me, like, it was in, like, in a circle. And they're like, well, her poster is, like, we do a briefing every morning. We already know about her. And I'm like, well, nothing's being done, you know. And I'm like, well, what's up with this gated hotel that you have to be authorized to get in? They're like, oh, we think we know about it, but you know, they didn't say much about it. I'm like, yeah, okay, you guys aren't doing anything. You know, around, it was like around 6 o'clock, that it was nighttime, around 6 o'clock that evening, I was talking to some lady and she would tell me about her son in addiction. And I'm like, where could you, like, where's the areas that these people go? And she told me, and like, between what street? So me and my friends went to this one gas station and I brought the flyer in, and there was a cashier and two customers, and then, have you seen my daughter? And I was like breaking down crying, and she's like, yes, I see her. I've seen her a few times. And the two guys is like, that's your daughter, Ashley. And I looked, I said, are you serious? I'm like, they're like, I know where she's at. I'm like, where is she? She's like, walk with me across the street. And I said, nope, I'm not walking. I'm like, I will drive with my friends. So that's when we got over to the, you know, to this gated community with lights or whatever. And it was a gated hotel, and you pull in, can't go through the gate. Guy's talking to this fake security guard, I guess is what you want to call him. And he comes out and he goes, yeah, I know your daughter. I'm like, okay. She goes, she's not here right now. But when she comes back, she'll only have 10 minutes on the phone. And I looked and I'm like, seriously? So then when we were backing out, just the vibe and the people I was seeing and everything else, and the guy staring me down, I'm like, something is off. I know I'm right, you know, just that gut feeling. And, you know, before that, what I forgot to mention is when I saw this one person at the gas station and told him about my daughter, he said, just be careful, you look like her. And that was the other instinct. I'm like, okay, I know something's up. So after we went to the hotel and they said that she'll call later or whatever, we went back around putting posters up. And then we scoped, we parked across the street from the hotel and just watched. And I'm like, there's a really bad place over there, but there's some really nice cars coming out. You know, we did that for about an hour and we went back to the hotel. That security guard came back out and he's like, told you I know her, but she's always sleeping on the streets out here, getting high, doped up. And I'm like, that's not what you said a couple hours ago or an hour ago. And he's like, yeah, I did. And I'm like, okay, now he's lying. So after that, we went around the corner of the hotel and, you know, to see what was going on and put some, you know, ask some questions to some people there, put some more posters up. Made it, you know, made a U-turn, and my friends are like, it's getting really late. Maybe, you know, she just doesn't want to be found. And really good friends of mine, I went off on them, and I didn't mean to, you know, but I'm like, no, something, I know something, and I have a feeling she's right around here, and I'm not leaving. And this is my car, we're not leaving, blah, blah, blah. At that point, we thought we saw someone pull a poster down. So we made that U-turn once again, and the poster wasn't pulled down. So I'm like, okay, let's go to another area and come back, you know. And at this time, I'm like praying, I'm crying. Once we did one more U-turn within seconds, my friend gets out of the car and they're like, oh my gosh, that is Ashley. And I looked and she was on the corner and some guy was like a little bit behind her. And I yelled out her name. I'm like, Ashley. And she looked at him, looked at me. You know, my other friend's like, thank you. She's on our hands now. You can leave. And we got out of there really fast, you know. Packed up our stuff and we left because we knew what we had to do because they could have been following us. You know, we had to throw all of her things, anything that she had on her, we had to toss out because they tend to, like put chips in it, you know, to track them, like trackers.
Oh, wow.
You know, I know from what my daughter was saying, you know, we, like a week and a half, 2 weeks before that, my brother and my niece went out there because they only live like 3.5 hours away. And my brother, they got some warning and everything. My brother told people out there, they're like, I'm going to bring my friends back and you don't know what this stuff is going to happen, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, of course, my daughter didn't know who, you know, didn't suspect who was out there, of course. But when they went back to my daughter, basically what they were doing that night, when I saw my daughter on the corner that morning, they took her, videoing her, taking pictures, bidding so people can bid on her so they could ship her out, because now there is word that I'm looking for her and two other people are looking for her. When found her on the corner, they were walking her back to the house because she was about to get shipped out, and I would never have seen her again.
Well, where were they going to send her? Do you know?
I think she said it was California. Mm-hmm. She said either California, and I don't want to say this, and you know, the other thing, because I even read about this, you know, all this Googling I did before I found her, that, you know, a lot of times, you know, like, they try to get rid of them, you know, and they'll dump them somewhere, you know what I'm saying? And that was the other thing, but they were ready to ship her out, so I found her right at that last second, you know, and to me, it was all God, you know, I believe in God. My prayers, everybody's prayers, And you know, she was found. It's a miracle, let's put it that way. But it's possible. I'm going to tell you that right now. It's so possible. I was on it, you know, and I knew the police didn't want to do any, you know, they weren't doing anything. And when I told the police about it, you know, they still don't, you know. I'm like, there's this place. I'm like, the guys there are selling drugs, and the girls there are being trafficked in this this old hotel. And I'm like, you guys aren't doing anything about it. You know, you read about what's going on in the out. And then what one cop said is like, well, we don't see what's going on the inside. So whatever that goes on the outside is what we handle. I'm like, but I'm telling you what's going on the inside. And they're like, well, your daughter needs to tell us. I'm like, she doesn't want to talk to you guys about it. She doesn't trust anybody. And she doesn't. You know, but, you know, we are getting her into therapy. We have not started that yet because she has a lot of trauma. You know, that she has to work through a lot of trauma.
And if there's a positive, it's that you have her back and you can work with her and you can help her as to, you know, not having her back and her being in an even worse situation someplace else.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, I mean, she has so much support behind her. So much support. Mm. You know, and again, it's possible. My heart goes out to the mother that you're talking about, or any parent, you know, that this is happening to. You know, I know there's groups that on Facebook that I put her information out there, you know, and then when I went to Utah, so many people recognized me. They're like, oh yeah, you put her on Facebook, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I don't even know you. But it got circulated through Facebook, people I did not know, you know, and which is great, you know, and it's like, wow. you know, and it's just like, you know, and it's a blessing, you know, and my heart does go out to anybody this is happening to. And what I want to do, my goal now is to open up a home for traffic, like girls that have been trafficked, you know, and I know there is places out there, but there's not a lot of places out there, you know, like where we can open up these homes.
And it's a big problem too. I don't think as many people realize how big a problem is. I read a stat that there's between 15,000 and 50,000 women and children every year that are trafficked in the United States, which is just mind boggling. So they need all the help they can get to have a safe place to hide or escape, or come when they come back, if they are recovered, to come back and ease back into, you know, normal life and get the help they need. I am curious, how old was Ashley when she went missing?
28.
Okay. So, and that's another thing that's interesting, because this is like, there's not a set age range, you know, that's...
No.
It can be children, it can be teenagers, and it could be, you know, 28-year-olds. You know, that's what's scary. This can happen to almost anyone.
Exactly.
I am curious, has anyone been charged, or are they facing charges? Is there any kind of way that someone here is going to face justice for what happened to her?
She gave me some names, but she is scared to give out any of that information at this time. And, you know, I am very empathetic, and, you know, I'm actually a behavioral coach, and I have so much sympathy and empathy for everybody, and I get where she's coming from. No, I wasn't there, but as a mother, I was there, and I get why she is scared, you know, because they do sit there. You know, when she was trafficked and everything, she got out of the bus, the only person knew that she was coming back, she thought, was one of her best friends. And when she got out the Greyhound bus, they were waiting for her, and the first thing they asked her, is anybody going to become looking for you? Mm-hmm. And at that moment, she knew what was happening, and she said no. Because if she would have said yes, there's multiple different types of groups out there, you know, that, like, trafficking. I don't know what you want to call them, trafficking groups or whatever. Mm-hmm. Gang, I don't know what you want to call them. But, you know, and then our children are protecting us, you know, and it's like, why did you do that? You know, because, you know what I'm saying? It's like, why did you do that? But I'm not going to sit there and say, well, you should have just told us.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Because they're frightened, and their abusers have taught them, you know, intimidated them with threats. You know, the other mom that we talked to, same thing. Her daughter was told that if you, you know, say anything, this is going to come back on your family. And,
Exactly what was said.
Yeah, and I think that's they prey and use those bits of fear against their victims. And you know, you mentioned in your daughter's case, in Ashley's case, that, you know, she had addiction in her life, so it's sort of like they use that to get in. They use that to get in, and whether it's addiction or whether it's someone that's lonely that needs a friend, and they befriend them to be their friend, whatever it is, there's these people are vultures that are looking for any crack in someone that they can use to exploit them and take advantage of them.
Yes, and that's exactly like, you know, as she'll tell me, like, she gets nightmares, you know, and, you know, every day she tells me more and more, like, what happened, you know, like, and it just, you know, I have so much resentment and hatred towards these people, you know, and I'm just like, but the one thing I have to remember is that she's safe now, and she's home, and, you know, it's just, I'm still in shock when I found her, you know, I was like at that last minute, you know, if we wouldn't have made that U-turn, if I wouldn't sat there and, you know, it's like, to me, I believe everybody believes in their own higher power. I believe in God, you know, and it's like God did all that, you know, for her and kept her safe, you know, to come back into my arms, you know?
Mm. Well, I'm glad that you were reunited. And I know obviously there's going to be things that Ashley's going to have to work through going forward. I hope she's able to get through it and move forward and on to the next chapter of her life. I am curious what advice you would have after going through this experience for someone out there that's going through the same thing, for a family that has a trafficked missing person. What advice would you have for them based on what you went through?
My advice is just keep on it. You know, like, social media is like one important to me. So that's why I like social media. Like, just putting that word out there, just keep on it on your own, because I'm not knocking every single police officer out there. I'm not, but they weren't doing anything at all. She doesn't, when they called once and she didn't want to talk to them, because it's like, okay, how can you trust them? They didn't even want to do anything. You know, I tried telling them where she was found and about this one pretend hotel or whatever. And it's like, they didn't want to do anything, but just keep on it. You got to stay strong for your kids. You know, you got to just, and I know it's hard to think positive and everything, but, you know, I heard people saying, oh my gosh, what if this happened? I'm like, there's no what if. So I'm like, because I'm staying positive and I'm not going to think of the worst right now. I'm not going to do that. And you can't. Otherwise, if you start thinking the worst, you're not going to be able to get yourself through that, you know, and that pain and that hurt that where's your child. No matter how old they are, they're always going to be your baby, you know. You just got to stay on it and, like, stay on it. You know, I mean, that was a 11-hour trip that we took, you know, but it was worth it, you know.
Yeah.
And just make sure you got to talk about it with your friends and family because, and if you don't talk about it and hold it in, you're going to blow up. That's what's going to happen. You're going to just hold all that inside. And you're going to, you know, it's just, you can't. You can't.
Well, that sounds like some very good advice. And hopefully if there's anyone listening that is going through something similar to what your family went through, then they can use that advice to help them get through their situation. I want to thank you again, Lynette, for coming on to share your story and Ashley's story with us. And again, I hope that you both have luck moving forward and moving on to the next chapter.
Thank you so much. And my heart and prayers go out to everybody out there that this, they're going through that. And, you know, I'm, you know, if anything, if I could do anything for anyone, I'm here, you know, just let me know, you know?
Yeah. I think it takes a team effort and it takes people like yourself to be out there to help people that need it. So thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Hi, Robin, and welcome to Missing Persons. I want to thank you for coming on to talk about your daughter Kristen's case with us.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
I'm happy to have you here. I've been watching some different news stories and footage of you being interviewed by the news, and it's obvious that Kristen's disappearance has been very hard on you. It's a case that seems to be pretty clearly in your mind, a case of human trafficking or sex trafficking. And that's got to be awful imagining what your daughter's gone through. But I want to talk a little bit about that and this whole trafficking issue, which is unfortunately a very big thing in this country. Before we get into what happened to Kristen, can you talk a little bit about who she is and tell us about her?
Sure. You know, Kristen's an amazing child, A-B honor roll. We were really active in Girl Scouts, JROTC. She was on the drill team in high school. Just a really good kid. She, you know, like I said, straight A student, gifted and talented. However, her sophomore year of high school, she started, you know, making some new friends, you know, that we definitely noticed weren't her average type of crowd. And, literally, she was pretty much groomed and lured from her school, her high school.
And that's a frightening thing to think about that, you know, someone could just be, you know, typical kid in school and then people sort of befriend them in that environment and sort of groom them, as you're mentioning. How long a period did this grooming go on that you saw? What kind of things did you notice that's very important to let people know what you noticed?
Right. No, her changes in her behavior. She was starting to skip school, you know, appeared, I guess, depressed. She wanted real fancy things, you know, Louis Vuitton and all that. Definitely, and you know, she started skipping class. That being said, you know, as a parent, I hope most parents have, you know, I had Verizon Smart Family. Plus, I had all of Kristen's passwords to every form of social media. And, you know, just the changes in her behavior. And then I realized that she was talking to some predators online. And then that began her first disappearance.
Did you confront her? Did you say, hey, who are these people? And did you try to put any kind of stop to it?
Oh, 100% I did. But you try taking a phone away from your 15-year-old and see how that ends up.
So it wasn't an easy thing to try and just put an end to it.
Right.
Did she open up and admit to what was going on, or that people were trying to groom her, or any of that stuff?
Well, when Kristen, she, I'm quoting, ran away in October of 2019, she was ruled a runaway. However, like I told you, I had her passwords to her Instagrams and all of that. So while she was gone that first period of time, I got her passwords. I went through her stuff and I'm like, wait a second, my daughter's being sold, you know, from the messages on Instagram. I started screenshotting the things and giving them to the police because, you know, she was a missing child. And I'm like, no, wait a second. She's being sold. And at this time, Mike, I really didn't know about human trafficking myself. I thought this happened in poor countries. You know what I mean? I never thought that my child could be, you know, sold, or that there were so many. That being said, her passwords changed on her Instagram, and I no longer had access to that. I gave the screenshots to the police. They said, well, you can't say she's trafficked until you have solid proof. About a week later, Kristen was recovered by HPD on Bissonnette Street here in Houston.
Okay. And when she was recovered, was this a case where she did voluntarily go on away on her own, or did someone take her in that instance as well?
Okay, Bissonnette Street here in Houston is where the prostitutes are. You go on this street and day, night, 24/7, there's a line of buyers, Mike. Kristen did not do this on her own. She was forced and coerced. When they found her on Bissonnette, Vice got involved. It was, you know, proven that she had been trafficked. We took her to Texas Children's. They did a rape kit on her. They actually refused me a drug test, and almost refused me that rape kit, by the way. And so Vice was involved, HPD involved, Harris County was involved, and, you know, Kristen had been trafficked. While Kristen starts giving her testimony, not willingly, but I decided best to move her to my mother's house in Spring, which is about an hour and a half away from Houston. Because we were starting to, you know, charge these men, and I had looked them up and they're dangerous, you know, convicts, gang members. So I thought I was doing the right thing and sending her to my mother's. My mom's a retired civil engineer. At the time, she was taking care of my dad, who was sick and unfortunately passed this past year. But, you know, I needed to get her away from Houston. You know, because my daughter was not the same daughter, Mike, when I got her back. You know, like I said, we went from Girl Scouts and you know, plays and events to psychiatry meetings, her up at night screaming, you don't know what they made me do, screaming. So my child was not the same child when we recovered her off of Bissonnette Street.
Well, that's awful. And you thought by moving her away from this big city that maybe a solution was to a quieter, safer area, thinking this problem wouldn't reach that far.
Correct. Correct. You know, I did not know what to do. And then I had to learn, you know, your daughter's been trafficked. Wait, what? Wait a second here. And Mike, let me go back. You know, Bissonnette, I grew up in Houston. We just stayed away from that area. However, when Kristen went missing again, that's where I went, Mike. I was like, I'm going straight back where they recovered her. And that's when I began finding missing children myself.
And your efforts to find her, you were finding other people that had gone missing?
Yes, sir.
Wow.
I've recovered 7 minor children and countless adults just by looking for Kiki.
Wow. That's frightening that there's that many different people that you can just accidentally find people that have been taken.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I wasn't expecting it. And like I said, my eyes have been opened into this dark realm of human trafficking. And, human trafficking, there's traffic bad here on I-35. You know what I mean? This is child sex slavery, Mike. This is child sex slavery. This is slavery.
That's frightening, and it's awful to think about. When Kristen came back home, you mentioned she was different. Obviously, whatever trauma she had gone through had changed her. How long was she home before she went missing again?
A month and a half. When we got her back, we began, you know, the counseling and just not knowing what to do as a parent, you know, and trying to capture these men. I mean, think about it. You have these men who, you know, raped and sold your daughter and they are still free. You know what I mean? And we kept Kristen's phone from her. First of all, her phone went to police evidence, by the way. But, you know, Christmas came around, and then, you know, we just wanted her to feel normal again, Mike. And in the beginning, we kept the phone from her. But we gave her the phone, and literally a day later, she was gone again.
So as soon as she got that phone back, someone approached her, or she used it to reach out to someone, whatever the case. And that's right. What you think facilitated her going missing the second time.
Right. And, you know, during these counseling meetings and, you know, I go to my mom's every day to see her and, you know, try to be normal. But, you know, she told us, Mom, they're going to kill you all if I don't go. She was especially worried about, she does have two younger brothers. Mom, they're going to kill them, Mom. You know, and I'm like, you know, this is Texas, Mike. I don't, you know, we're safe at our homes. And, you know, but she seemed to think they're going to kill you all if I don't go. I, along with my son, literally, you know, chased her down. She was gaslighted, manipulated. Like I said, just not the same little girl.
Sounds like
her
innocence
had been taken.
Yeah, and it sounds like they used some kind of fear tactics on her to get her controlled, that if, you know, you don't cooperate, if you don't do what we say, your family is going to be at risk.
Right.
Wow.
Right.
So can you talk a little bit about the second time that she did go missing, and when it happened, did you say, oh, here we go again? Or was there anything different about the second time she went missing that was different from the first time?
Well, the second time she went missing, my gut said Amber Alert. When she went missing again, of course, it was in another county. So instead of Harris County or HPD, it was a Montgomery County case, because I had moved her so far up north. You know, that's a different jurisdiction. So in dealing with Montgomery County, I was like, no, she didn't run away. You don't understand. We just got her back from being trafficked. Like, I want an Amber Alert. She did, you know what I mean? And, you know, at that time, they're still trying to find the guys and build a case, and nobody had been arrested quite yet. With the exception of Arian Jackson was arrested before her second disappearance. But at any rate, yeah, and Montgomery County, literally, I'm like, they're not going to go to Houston to look for my baby, you know? And I thought, as a parent, you turn to law enforcement for help and that they'll take care of it. Well, you know, here's her phone. Here's her testimony. She was recovered off the net. Hey, you know, go get her. We also, her new phone that we gave to her, instead of them issuing a warrant, we signed over, you know, the phone so they can access that quickly. You know what I mean? And find her.
Thinking
her phone was actually right, thinking that they were going to help.
Sure.
And Mike, her phone was actually active 7 days after she went missing. So Kristen went missing January 2nd, 2020, and that phone was active until January 9th. After January 9th, that's it. That's all communication cut off. That was it. She even reached out to one of her best friends and said, "Hey, I'm in trouble. I think I'm in deep. Please help me." And that was January 9th.
So were they able to reveal any clues as far as locations or anyone she had been in contact with from her phone?
Nothing. Mike, I have yet to even meet with a law enforcement detective. Mike, no one has been to my home to interview me or my family. Well, with the exception of FBI, I recently just met FBI 2 months ago. I really firmly believe they are actually doing everything they can to find Kristen. But as far as law enforcement, Mike, I haven't even met with a detective.
That's scary.
Yeah, very scary. And Mike, you know, this is what I do now. I'm invited to events and I try to, you know, bring this awareness that so bad needs to happen. So I go to events and kind of share my experience and Kristen's story with people. And I went to an event this year, Mike, and Montgomery County, you know, police officers speak at these events too. And Montgomery County was there. Mike, the lead detective off of Kristen's case spoke at this event. She looked at me. I looked at her. I know she knew who I was because Kristen looks just like me. However, I did get married last year. We were trying to hold it off and wait for Kiki, so my last name changed. So I think when they read who was going to be there, they didn't say, "Oh, you know, that's Robin Corey." My name changed. Okay. Mike, this woman, the lead detective on my daughter's case, spoke in front of all the audience at this event, even spoke on my daughter's case. Mike. And then after the audience told her, "Hey, that's Kristen's mom," this woman literally picked up her bag, glared at me, and walked out as fast as she could, Mike.
Well, that must have been awkward.
Very devastating. I felt the rage come from my toes all the way up to my eyes till a tear came to my eyes. Because literally, I mean, I need to talk to this woman. I've never been updated. I have given them every clue, because Harris County is still trying to convict these men. And so the DA is very much in contact with me, but I'm giving the evidence to Montgomery County because I would like to think of it as laziness or incompetence rather than, purposely not doing their jobs, if you would.
Yeah. I'm frustrated when I hear that investigators don't communicate with the family members to say, "Hey, we hear you, we're listening to you," and give you updates, things like that. Even if they can't solve the case, they should at least, you know, stay in touch with you and just say, "Hey, we know you're going through a tough time and we want to help you and here we are." But, you know, I hear a lot of times, unfortunately, that that's not the case.
Nothing, Mike. And like I said, she literally ran out of that room after the audience said that's Kristen's mom. And it's not my event, you know, and I can't, you know, physically do anything, you know what I mean? So I really had to compose myself and remain professional and not just bust out crying on the floor. You know, this is my baby, man. This is my one and only daughter.
Yeah. But I know you resorted to hiring a private detective. Is that accurate?
Yes, sir.
And was the private detective able to find any clues or any evidence of what happened to Kristen?
No. Really nothing, Mike. Like I said, the last movement was on that phone, And then the actual, I got a picture from Houston DA, February 8th of 2021. Okay. They sent me a photo or two photos of what they thought to be Kristen, because law enforcement uses what they call traffic jams. They can put a picture of anyone in and it searches the world wide web and they will get results back. That's what law enforcement uses. So Houston, they're still trying to convict these guys. So they ran my daughter's face through traffic jam and it produced two photos. Okay. So like I said, February 8th of 2021, the DA sends me these photos. And, you know, that's a year into this, Mike. And I've seen 1,000 could be Kristens. And, you know, is this her? And Mike, this was the closest thing I've seen to Kristen. Now, granted, in the picture, her face was kind of covered. And they would not let me see the full picture because it was an escort website. And I'll tell you, so I went and searched myself. I found the website with that picture on it. I saw the full photo and I can 99.89% sure that's my kid. And that ad was listed in Atlanta, Georgia. And she was being sold for $10,000 a night in Atlanta. Now, at this time, it becomes a federal case because there's actual proof that she's crossed state lines, right? It takes them a year to even make it a federal case. And that's when her case became a federal case, is when that ad came up. And I gave that to I emailed Montgomery County, that lead detective, you know, because, you know, that's what we do. We email and talk. And I sent her that photo and she's like, where'd you get this? Da, 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 da. And I pretty much told her, had she been running Kristen's face through traffic jam, she would have found that ad in December instead of February. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That ad was from December of 20 and we found that ad in February of 21.
So it's got to be frustrating to get these possible sightings or things that you think are her, but not have them lead to any kind of resolution or finding her.
Right, exactly.
You mentioned charges that they're trying to pursue against these few different people. Sure. And some of the charges that they're associated with, I think, are promotion or prostitution, trafficking a child, different things along those natures. How long is this process that it's going through? Is this a lengthy process? Why no results yet? And what are the possible outcomes if they, you know, they determine these people have had anything to do with Kristen's disappearance?
Right. And yes, we actually have one conviction already, Mike. In December of 2021, the Houston DA did a fantastic job without Kristen being here of proving that Gerald Jones trafficked my daughter. And that was actually his third probation violation. And he had already had prior trafficking convictions. And that man was convicted to 15 years for trafficking my daughter. So it's not presumed that Kristen is trafficked. She is a confirmed victim. That being said, the other man that was charged was actually no billed. He is still selling minor children. He got off with probation and is still selling minor children. And I have the screen recording to prove it. Huh. The other man charged, Arian Jackson, the feds already had this man back in 2017, Mike. They already had this scumbag, Arian Jackson, for trafficking. Well, it's when it gets federal level, they're charged with slavery and involuntary servitude. This is some serious charges. This is civil rights.
Yeah.
So Arian Jackson, the feds picked up his case, Mike, because he was sitting in Harris County Jail and had made a whole nother Instagram and still was pimping out girls from Harris County Jail. I gave that evidence to law enforcement and the feds. I said, how is my daughter missing? And of course, I'm following all these people. I'm Miss Mama Detective. You know what I mean? Like, I've turned into this desperate mother searching for her daughter. And this man, like I said, had made up a whole nother Instagram account, still making the shot called from Harris County Jail.
Wow. That's frightening and disgusting. Yeah. Disgusting that these people have these records and these histories, yet they're able to somehow continue to do this stuff and not be stopped.
Right. And see, like I said, he's already been charged with it. He got smarter, Mike. He got smarter. I mean, yeah, he got caught again, but that's what these traffickers do. There's no real punishment because the victims are so scared to come forward and there's no punishment. So they get off with probation and they learn from the courts because the court comes out with all this evidence like they did with Kristen for Gerald Jones. And this man is going to sit in there maybe 6 years, master his craft, know what he did wrong and come back and still traffic little girls. It's ridiculous, Mike. And let me go back to Arian Jackson. The feds already had him. He's being charged again. And guess what? His mother is being charged with him. So not only do we have men charged, but we have females charged in Kristen's case, Mike.
Yeah, that was a shocking thing that I saw, that there a lot of times it's not just men that are doing this. They have women accomplices that are just as guilty in helping to make this happen.
Right. You know, I mean, the girls are, you know, instead of, you know, being with Arian, they have the girl groomer. So, hey, girl, let's go get your nails done. Oh, you let's go get dressed up and, you know, kind of hype the girls. So, you know, when the pimps go to pimp them out, they're all, you know, cute and feel safe, you know, and oh, this is going to work out and we're going to make money. And you know what I mean?
Very, very scary. And it's like a wolf in sheep's clothing trying to get them to get their guard down.
Right.
Well,
right.
What is the very latest? I know there's not a whole lot of communication with the police, but you've also mentioned you're talking to the FBI. What's the very latest on the case, and are they making any progress, any clues that might help locate her?
Mike, we're doing DNA on 8 corpses that have been unidentified. That's where we're at in Christian's case. We're literally doing DNA on found bodies in woods and water. And that's where we're at.
That's got to be a horrible, horrible, frightening thing to think about, worried that that's your daughter, but even if it's not Kristen, that's somebody else's daughter.
Exactly. Exactly, Mike.
I just, you know, you mentioned that this seems, you know, you hear human trafficking, you picture some third world country where this stuff can go on. But the fact that it's happening in the United States and by the thousands, you know, it's scary that can happen here. If it can happen here, it can obviously happen anywhere. But I'm curious, you've sort of become, you know, you sort of had to get educated with this trafficking and dive into this world. What have you learned about what keeps it going? And is there a way, in your opinion, that you can help stop it?
Oh, 100%. It's the demand. There's such a high demand for sex that it really can't be stopped. And Mike, you know, I told you about Bissonnette Street. I'm telling you, man, you know, COVID hit right after Kristen went missing. The face mask went up. I panicked. I'm like, how am I supposed to even find my kid with face masks? And then in my heart, I was like, this will push her out. You know, nobody wants, you know, a kid during COVID. And like I said, Mike, I went and I searched Bissonnette. So when COVID hit, the whole world shut down. Right. But Texas really kind of, we stayed open. You know what I mean, Mike? We stayed open. And I'll tell you what, the track or Bissonnette, we had cars from California, Florida, Atlanta, Georgia, Oklahoma, because we were the only city to remain open. So when COVID hit, all the girls and traffickers came to Houston. This and that. Like I said, there's a line of buyers and it never stops, Mike. The girls are wearing G-strings. It's red light district here.
So as long as there's a demand for it, you're saying that this is going to continue because people will try and fill that demand by taking these, trafficking these victims.
Right. And, you know, the kids are worth more than the adults. And so when I started going out there, I learned, first of all, it's very dangerous. I do not fit in. So I began doing outreaches, if you will, you know, giving the girls condoms, booty wipes, Red Bulls, you know, and I'd carry around a picture of Kristen with me until I got comfortable with them. And then, you know, hey, have you seen this girl? Oh, you're looking for, oh, dang, no, I haven't. You know, but then the girls, since I was out there looking for Kristen and they thought, you know, I was this praying woman just giving out, you know, condoms or freedom. They started telling me, hey, that's a minor over there. Hey, there's a kid over there, because the kids are taking all of their money. Mike, the kids are worth more than the adults. People will pay more for a child with their sick minds.
That's disgusting.
Yeah.
And that's what, that's what we're dealing with this problem nationwide. And, hopefully there's a way to, whether it's educating people, whether it's putting these guys away earlier, faster, for longer. Hopefully there's a way to at least put a dent in it and slow it down. Because this is just getting out of hand right now.
Right. And that's, you know, I'm trying to bring it to city leaders here. And, you know, 3 years into this, like, thank you for the thoughts and prayers, but I really need some law reform and change. You know, if you look at Kristen's story from beginning to end, you see all the flaws and the mistakes and the lack of help. And I mean, hell, I mean, Gabby Petito, and they brought out the swamp quads for Brian Landry. Where are the swamp quads for Kristen? She is a child.
Yeah.
That was sold and raped.
Yeah, there's definitely some holes in the system someplace that need to be, you know, the issues need to be corrected, and people need to be held accountable, and there's got to be help to get some of these cases, one, to prevent them, but two, to recover some of these victims too when it's possible.
Right.
I do want to close on a note that if somehow, some way that Kristen's out there and she can hear your voice, what would you want to tell her?
That I love her. That I love her so much. And I wish she would have listened to me. And, you know, Mike, at this, she just wouldn't do this, Mike. They've hurt her. Like, my daughter just would not do this, Mike. She wouldn't leave her brother. She wouldn't leave her aunt. I mean, my sister just got married. We all cried because Kristen would have been a bridesmaid. You know? It was just these new friendships full of empty promises that our kids are walking into now. You don't know who to trust. You know? Mm. And that one wrong choice totally altered her future.
I think that's what's frightening to any of us with kids. You know, you're always looking out for them, but you can't keep them from going out and being exposed to people like this, unfortunately. And you never really know, is there one person who is trying to groom them and trying to get them into a life or take them away in this kind of way? And it's really scary.
Well, yeah, Mike. And, you know, with Kristen's story, you know, these are paid recruiters in the high schools. The high schoolers are paid by pimps to recruit girls. I mean, it's this whole system they have made. And it's getting worse and worse by the day. And like I said, at first I thought it was just Kristen. But then when I'm out there, it's not just my baby. It's victim after victim, you know? And I'm pulling them off the streets with blood dripping down a 12-year-old's leg. What is going on?
on, y'all. And Houston, we have a problem. This is America's top track. I'm telling you, if you ever come visit, you know, I'll give you the address and you could just go sit out there and watch it for yourself. It's disgusting.
Yeah, very frightening. And, you know, obviously this goes on every place too, but Houston, I know parts of California, here in Florida, Tampa is a area for high trafficking. So I think it's safe to say that this is nationwide. There's no real place to hide from it. And we all have to be on guard and maybe change the laws to keep it from happening, to make it harder for people to do this and get away with it. And I hope somehow, some way, with your efforts, and that you are able to find out what happened to Kristen and recover her.
Right. Me too, Mike. That's my prayer. I still have hope that she's still with us. And I know if anybody can make it out of it, it would be her. She's my daughter.
Well, we'll definitely do our part and help spread the word and let people know that she's still out there. And again, thank you for sharing her story and your story with us.
All right. Well, thank you for having me, Mike. I really appreciate your time and thank you for helping spread awareness about this tragic, horrific tragedy we have, the real pandemic.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Missing Persons. If you can provide any information to help solve the case we discussed in this episode, please contact the appropriate authorities.
If you enjoy this podcast, please take a moment to tell your friends about Missing Persons and invite them to listen to the show. Word of mouth will help us grow and bring these cases to a larger audience. You can also help us by taking a moment to rate and review Missing Persons on the platform you're listening to us now on.
We'd like to tell you a little bit about our Patreon program. If you visit patreon.com/missingpodcast, you can sign up to help this podcast through ongoing monthly support. As a thank you, we'll give you an on-air shout-out, a thank you card and sticker, plus you'll get early access to ad-free episodes of the show and any bonus content.
Your Patreon support also goes towards helping the missing, because every dollar that we earn through Patreon will be split with charlieproject.org. The wonderful website that's been sharing information about so many missing persons cases for years. We hope you'll consider supporting the show. Just a reminder that new episodes of Missing Persons air every other Saturday. If you want to find us on social media, you can search Facebook for Missing Persons Podcast. And we're also on Twitter with the handle @missing_pod. And of course, you can find us on our website, missingpersonspodcast.net. On behalf of Jess Betancourt, this is Mike Morford saying thanks, and we'll see you next time on Missing Persons.